Hello, this is Mary, and I'll be reading selections from the Decatur Herald and Review from Monday, March 10th, 2025. Starting with some regional news. Christmas trees dropped in Lake Mattoon as fish habitat, by Rob Stroud. Neoga. Christmas trees that adorned local homes 3 months ago are now set to provide habitat for bluegill, crappie, and other fish at Lake Mattoon. Volunteers spent part of Saturday drilling holes through the bases of nearly 40 donated trees and using wire to tie on concrete blocks. Fishing boats driven by Dawson Hendricks and Brian Petersheim were subsequently used to drop the weighted trees in water approximately 10 feet deep in the lake's south end. "I enjoy using the lake. If I get a chance to help, I want to help," Petersheim said, amid Christmas trees being stacked on his boat. John Wurtzbaugh, lake supervisor for the city of Mattoon, said the Christmas trees will provide structures where fish can spawn, and then their young can hide from predators until they mature. "It's a very good project," Wurtzbaugh said of the tree drop. He noted that project organizer Colton Davis and his volunteers also carried out this conservation work in 2023 at Lake Mattoon. Colton Davis, a Mattoon native, said he got involved with this project because he is a longtime fisherman and wants to do his part to help this outdoor sport continue. "Knowing that Christmas tree drops had been a tradition more than 20 years ago at this lake," Colton Davis said he contacted the Illinois Department of Natural Resources for how-to tips, and then recruited volunteers from the Lake Mattoon Bass Club and other groups to help. The volunteers for the 2023 and 2025 tree drops included Brad Davis, the father of the project's organizer. Brad Davis said his son is all about conservation, and he has been proud to see him step up to assist with this effort alongside so many other volunteers. "Thank goodness we have gotten plenty of help," Brad Davis said, as he and his fellow volunteers worked on the trees next to the lake's new kayak rental kiosk and launch. The volunteer opportunity also drew fisherman John Adams of Charleston, who has similar experiences with efforts at Lake Shelbyville. "I felt I better be here to help with this one, too," Adams said, adding, "I fish here about as much as I do at Lake Shelbyville." Adams said the drop events at Lake Shelbyville involved cube-shaped habitats, which are made out of corrugated pipes and PVC pipes. Looking forward to future conservation efforts, Colton Davis said he plans to eventually schedule build days for mini-cube habitats and crappie stakes to drop at Lake Mattoon. Davis said man-made habitat structures will last longer than Christmas trees and will be easier to collect in large quantities than those holiday decorations. He said the 2023 drop received approximately 300 donated trees. "It's just getting a little hard to get real Christmas trees," Davis said, noting that many households are opting to use artificial ones. Continuing with front page news, if you see thick smoke at either end of Lake Decatur next week, don't be concerned, by Scott Perry. Decatur. If you see thick smoke at either end of Lake Decatur next week, don't be concerned. The city of Decatur is planning 2 prescribed burns from March 10th through the 15th. If weather permits, a burn will be conducted near the dam and another west of Star Route Road and north of Ray's Bridge Road. According to a news release, the prescribed burns will be conducted on separate days by trained and experienced professionals. They are designed to decrease invasive plant species and to increase prairie diversity and forest health. The properties are owned by the City of Decatur. and the Burns comply with City Code Chapter 48 concerning native plantings and burning by city officials. They also comply with the Illinois Environmental Protection Agency, as detailed in the open burning permits issued to the city of Decatur. Local authorities and fire officials have been notified the burns will be taking place. Boyfriend steals furnace for girlfriend who needed heat, police report, by Tony Reed, Decatur. Police report that Michael R. Webb didn't want his girlfriend to share a Decatur home with him without heat, so he went back to the public housing she had been evicted from and stole the furnace. A sworn affidavit filed by the Decatur Police Department said it was hooked up and running when officers arrived at Webb's house in the 4600 block of North Neely Avenue, which had been without heat previously, to execute a search warrant February 16th. Weather records show the high that day was -1 and the low -11 degrees. Officer Jeffrey Hockaday, who signed the affidavit, said the 37-year-old defendant had also ripped out the water heater from his girlfriend's former public housing home in the 1700 block of North 31st Street, but he hadn't had time to hook that up yet. Webb is described as having shared his girlfriend's former home with both her and a 39-year-old male housemate. He was present when officers arrived to execute the search warrant at the home on North Neely, and is quoted as telling them that the furnace and water heater had been stolen. The housemate said Michael broke into the house where he stole the water heater and furnace because he wanted his girlfriend to have heat, said Hockaday. The officer said estimates to replace the stolen furnace and water heater and carry out repairs ranged to up more than $8,000. Police had already been hot on Webb's trail after copper piping had been stolen from the North 31st Street home, and Webb had made repeated visits to a Decatur recycling firm trying to sell more than 13 pounds of copper pipe. Webb had been back there again late January trying to sell copper wire, and this time a suspicious employee called police. Hockaday said the worker had tried to disguise the call to keep Webb around until the officer arrived, but the defendant had grown suspicious and fled, leaving his latest batch of stolen goods behind. Police had tracked him down and arrested him February 21st, and he now faces a charge of burglary. He has been granted pretrial release and is due back in Macon County Circuit Court on Wednesday for a preliminary hearing where he will enter a formal plea to the charge. Continuing with local news, game ends in threat from real gun, police say, by Tony Reed, Decatur. An argument over a game prompted an 18-year-old suspect to pull a gun and point it at the head of the boy he was playing against, police report. The Decatur boy later told officers he had defended himself by punching Nicholas Ellis, the accused gunman, and a fight ensued at the child's home in the 2500 block of North Dunn Drive. A sworn affidavit filed by the Decatur Police Department said Ellis then fled the scene, but he was soon in the custody of police officers, who showed up later that day at his home in the 2500 block of Easy Street and arrested him after questioning him. Police said Ellis first denied having a gun or threatening the boy with it, but later he confessed and told officers they could find the weapon on the couch where he sleeps. The firearm turned out to be a Derringer 22 caliber two-shot Magnum handgun that police say was loaded. Nicholas also showed DPD officers a picture of Instagram of him holding a firearm, which he said was a 22, police said. The gun's serial number showed it had been reported stolen out of Waterloo, Iowa, while a check of Ellis's own history revealed he was free on pretrial release after being charged in November with battery, an offense he denies. Macon County Circuit Court Judge Lindsay Shelton denied him pretrial release when he appeared before her February 25th on the gun charges. These include aggravated assault with a deadly weapon, the aggravated unlawful possession of a gun, and the possession of a stolen firearm. Ellis is scheduled to be back in court Wednesday for a preliminary hearing when he will enter formal pleas to the charge. Decatur man's face injured in fistfight, police report, by Tony Reed. Decatur. Police say a Decatur man needed medical treatment for injuries to his face after a fistfight broke out in the 700 block of North Water Street. Sergeant James Tertocha with the Decatur Police Department said a victim in his 40s was taken to the hospital in the wake of the confrontation, which happened around 9 a.m. Thursday, March 6th. A 38-year-old Decatur man was later arrested and booked on a preliminary charge of aggravated battery. All preliminary charges are subject to review of the Office of the State's Attorney. Turning to state news, state stargazers await full worm moon, lunar eclipse, blood moon, by Meredith Howard. Illinois stargazers can catch a glimpse of a full worm moon this March, in addition to a total lunar eclipse or blood moon. The worm moon gets its face from the earthworms that spring to life and enrich the soil as the end of the winter approaches, according to the Farmer's Almanac. It's also sometimes referred to as the wind moon. Full moons have multiple names, and many come from indigenous cultures. The almanac uses indigenous moon names, along with monikers from colonial America and other North American sources. This month's full moon will also bring a full total lunar eclipse. A total lunar eclipse is also known as a blood moon because it makes the moon look red, and it happens when the moon passes through Earth's shadow. It will be the first total lunar eclipse since 2022, according to Smithsonian Magazine. It first appears to have a bite taken out of one side, but as maximum eclipse nears, the moon transforms into a deep crimson orb. That red color comes from the ring of all the sunsets and sunrises you'd see encircling our planet if you were an astronaut on the lunar surface right then. Afterward, the eclipse plays out in reverse, with the red color fading and the dark bite shrinking, until the moon looks like its usual self again, NASA's website says. The full moon will peak at 1:55 a.m. Central Daylight Time, Friday, March 14th. That is after daylight savings time began this past Sunday. The full portion of the lunar eclipse will begin at 1:36 a.m. March 14th. The maximum will be at 1:58 a.m., and the full portion will end at 2:31 a.m., according to astronomy publication. After the worm or blood moon, stargazers will have 10 more opportunities to see a full moon this year. Saturday, April 12th, the pink moon. Monday, May 12th, flower moon. Wednesday, June 11th, the strawberry moon. Thursday, July 10th, the buck moon. Saturday, August 9th, the sturgeon moon. Sunday, September 7th, the corn moon. Monday, October 6th, the hunter's moon, which is also a supermoon. Wednesday, November 5th, the beaver moon, also a supermoon. And finally, Thursday, December 4th, the cold moon, which is also a supermoon. Continuing state news, Republican bills aim to assist Illinois in its battle against fentanyl. By Jade Aubrey, Capital News, Illinois. Springfield. Illinois Republican senators have filed bills that would combat the state's fentanyl crisis and further punish major possessors of the drug. One bill would reclassify a fentanyl overdose as a poison, while another would consider major fentanyl possessors a threat to public safety. According to the Illinois Department of Public Health, Illinois experienced 3,261 fatal opioid-related drug overdoses in 2022 and 2,855 deaths in 2023. There's not one simple area it affects. It's everyone, Senator Sally Turner, Republican Beeson, said. If you don't know someone that's been tainted with fentanyl, you will. Fentanyl is a synthetic opioid that can be up to 50 times stronger than heroin and 100 times stronger than morphine. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention says fentanyl accounts for a major portion of all fatal and non-fatal overdoses in the U.S. It is usually added to other types of drugs to increase potency, making the laced drug cheaper, more powerful, addictive, and dangerous. A packet of sugar that you get at the restaurant, that's about 2 milligrams, Turner said. If you compare that to 2 milligrams of fentanyl, that little packet could kill 500 people. So think about that. That's how important this is. Turner and Senator Sue Reason, Republican Morris, announced their sponsorship of the 4 fentanyl-related bills during a news conference with McLean County Coroner Kathleen Yoder in the State House. The vast majority of time in these deaths, fentanyl is not something someone chooses to use intentionally, Reason said. It's something that they take when it's laced in other pills or products. Families are losing loved ones, not because of addiction, because they are unknowingly being poisoned right now. Reason championed Senate Bill 1283, which would change the official language of IDPH for a fentanyl-related death from an overdose to a poisoning. When we treat fentanyl deaths as overdoses, we minimize the impact that this drug has on the victims, Reason said. As legislators, it's our responsibility to ensure that people who die from this poison are recognized as victims, not just another overdose statistic. Representative LaShawn Ford, Democrat, Chicago, said in an interview he is supportive of Reason's bill and is filing and sponsoring a duplicate bill in the House. It's clear that fentanyl is poisonous and people die from it, he said. And many times, people that die from the fentanyl overdose, they're not intending to die, but they get a fatal dose, just like a fatal dose of any poison, and therefore it should be registered as a poison. Reason is also pushing Senate Bill 113, which would require someone charged with handling 15 grams or more of substances containing fentanyl to prove that they do not pose a threat to public safety, to be granted pretrial release. This shifts the burden away from prosecutors and judges and makes clear that the safety of our communities come first, she said. Neither of Reason's bills have been assigned to a committee, however. Ford said he agreed with Reason that such people are a threat to public safety and planned to talk to the senators further about the bill. His main concern is if judges can already do this under the Safety Act. Will Narcan continue to be the solution? Naloxone, often referred to as its brand name, Narcan, is an over-the-counter medication as either a nasal spray or injection, and is often used to reverse opioid overdoses. In 2010, Illinois passed the Good Samaritan Law, which allows non-medical personnel to administer Narcan to a person experiencing an opioid or heroin overdose. The law's enactment led to the creation of the Drug Overdose and Prevention Program, which enabled the Illinois Department of Human Services to provide organizations with Narcan for free to be dispersed within communities in the state. A CDC report from late 2024 disclosed that, like Illinois, fentanyl-related overdose deaths decreased from 2022 to 2023, the first nationwide decrease since 2018. Last week, the Pritzker administration released a statement that reported an 8.3% decrease in total drug overdose deaths in Illinois in 2023. Synthetic opioid-related deaths also dropped by 9.5%. The statement noted that several factors likely contributed to this decline, including sustained efforts to increase Narcan distribution throughout the state. "What this tells me is that Narcan works and that it saves lives," Ford said. "That's why we have to make sure we do everything we can to get Narcan out there." But Turner and Reason weren't so optimistic. "I mean, great, we've had a decrease in fentanyl deaths," Reason said. "But considering where we want to, where we need to be, we're nowhere near being able to take a victory lap." Yoder, the McLean County coroner, reported that fentanyl had recently been mixed with new substances like benzodiazepine and xylazine, often called Trank. These are substances that Narcan cannot reverse. "The sad reality is that Narcan alone cannot solve the problem," Yoder said. "We need a holistic approach that includes keeping these dangerous drugs off the street and holding those trafficking these drugs accountable in order to safeguard their unwitting victims." Turner agreed. Yoder mentioned that there's now several forms of fentanyl that are coming out, she said. "I think we're going to see more deaths because of Narcan doesn't work on everything. I think," she told us, "maybe we're going to see that in the future." Illinois patients and hospitals fear potential Medicaid cuts. By Lisa Schenker, Chicago Tribune. Chicago, if Alex Outlaw doesn't get monthly infusions of medication for Crohn's disease, he experiences painful symptoms that can make it difficult to hold down a job. But he doesn't make enough money as a manager at a rental car agency to buy private health insurance or to cover the infusions, which can cost more than $1,000 each. That's where Medicaid comes in. The state and federally funded health insurance program covers Outlaw's monthly infusions, allowing him to manage his condition so he can work and support his family of five, he said. "It's pretty much saving my life right now," said Outlaw, 38, who lives on the city's west side. "If something happened to his Medicaid coverage, it's the end for me," he said. Outlaw is one of 3.4 million people in Illinois on Medicaid, more than one quarter of the state's population, who are anxiously awaiting discussions in Washington, D.C. over the future of the program. In late February, House Republicans passed a budget resolution instructing the committee that oversees Medicaid to cut $880 billion in costs over the next 10 years to help pay for new and existing tax cuts and enhance border and national security, according to House Republicans. Lawmakers have not yet said they plan to slash Medicaid, but it would not be possible to cut that much money without reducing Medicaid funding, according to figures released this week by the Congressional Budget Office. President Donald Trump has said he won't cut Medicaid, but has praised the budget resolution. In the meantime, Illinois patients say they're worried about losing their health coverage. Illinois hospitals that serve low-income areas say they may have to close or cut services, depending on the depths of any cuts. And healthcare advocates say such a move could cost everyone more in the long run. I think people don't realize how much Medicaid pays for, said Stephanie Altman, Director of Healthcare Justice and Senior Director of Policy at the Shriver Center on Poverty Law in Chicago, noting that Medicaid covers most nursing home stays in addition to traditional healthcare costs for people with low incomes and disabilities. If hospitals are forced to absorb the expense of treating uninsured patients, those costs will ultimately be passed on to everyone, she said. Even if you're not technically on Medicaid, Medicaid probably has an impact on your life one way or the other. Chicago area hospital leaders say it could be difficult for some safety net hospitals to keep their doors open if significant cuts are made to Medicaid. We pride ourselves on being a safety net institution that takes care of a predominantly Medicaid population, said Dr. Nyoz Idiki, president and CEO of Sinai Chicago, where about 70% of the patients are on Medicaid. If that was to be significantly changed, safety nets like Sinai Chicago, it would be almost impossible to survive. Most other safety nets would probably disappear and leave a lot of patients without any access to care. About 70-80% of Humboldt Park Health's patients are on Medicaid, said CEO Jose Sanchez. There will be clinics that close. There will be hospitals that close, Sanchez said. Some of us that remain open, we will have to cut services. It could mean longer waits in the emergency room, or cuts to transportation the hospital provides to patients who need help getting there, he said. Chicago area federally funded health centers also rely heavily on Medicaid revenue. They are clinics that receive federal fundings to help them care for underserved communities. About 63,000 of Erie Family Health Center's 95,000 patients are on Medicaid, said Dr. Carolyn Hoke, Chief Clinical Officer at Erie. If Medicaid were cut, we would be in the unfortunate situation of having to look at how many patients we can serve and how many services we can offer, Hoke said. She thinks health disparities between different groups of Chicago area residents would grow if federally qualified health centers weren't able to provide as much preventative care and care for chronic conditions. Fantasia Gray, 25, of Grayslake, has been a patient at Erie for most of the last decade. If something is wrong, they take the time out to listen to you, Grace said. They get you the resources that you need. They actually care. Gray recently gave birth to a son after receiving prenatal care at Erie. She works part-time as a school bus driver and doesn't make enough money to pay for private health insurance. The Medicaid coverage she receives, along with the income from her job, allows her to be on my feet and stable. State and local Democratic leaders hope Illinois residents mobilize to oppose the potential cuts. We are facing a real challenge. Red alert, everybody, Governor J.B. Pritzker said during a news conference with Illinois Senator Dick Durbin. I mean, it is time to wake up, get out, and do something. Meanwhile, some state Republicans say it's too early to get up in arms about the issue, noting that congressional Republicans have not actually said they're going to cut Medicaid. We don't know what will happen, Representative William Hauter said at the recent legislative hearing on the issue. There are a lot of things we have no control over, budget negotiations going on at the national level. Though congressional Republicans have not yet said whether they'll cut Medicaid, they have floated a number of ideas. If the government caps the amounts it sends to state, that could leave Illinois with tough choices, state leaders say. I'll take a short break now and return with the second half hour of the Decatur Herald and Review from Monday, March 10th, 2025. Please stay tuned.